Good evening, everyone. Welcome to a special episode of our Ukrainian football podcast. I'm Adam from UkaFoot24, and I'm really happy to have Andrew from Zarya Londonsk back again. Good evening, Andrew.
Good evening, guys.
And Ray, the King of North Kiev, great to have you back with us this evening.
Evening, guys. Pleasure to be here.
And a special welcome to our special guest this evening, Ian Birchall. Great to have you with us, Ian, for those of you who are not as used to the European game, has been coaching for a number of years, top-level clubs in Sweden and Norway, and is originally from Leicester. And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're here to discuss a very important game coming up. Well, it will be in today. Zarya are travelling to the UK to take on Leicester City. We are recording this a week in advance, but you'll be listening to it just before the game to get yourself in the mood for the match. So, Ian, great to have you with us today.
Thanks, guys. Good to be here.
Leicester, they've been doing incredibly well. What are your hopes for them this year in the Europa League?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, it was a bit of a disaster end to the season after the lockdown finished last year, and a bit of an anti-climax, really, because they've been so close to the Champions League spots the entire season. So felt a little bit, anticlimactic to end up in the Europa League, really, given the position for the season. But I guess for Leicester, you know, we haven't got a long history of European football. So just the opportunity to be in the Europa League and to play European out, you know, normally for the supporters, obviously there's not many there now. But the opportunity to go out and play teams in Europe is a great thing for Leicester. So I think we of course the team want to achieve again in the Premier League, but the demands are so high. You see the investments from teams that are just around that, the teams that finish near to us like Chelsea and Man United, along with other teams that have put more and more money in like Spurs. So it's very, very competitive. So I think the Europa League offers a fantastic opportunity to go and perhaps advance through a competition. And it is a route into the Champions League, of course, if you don't get it in the Premier League. So I think for Leicester, I think obviously to try to maintain in there with the top six in the Premier League and have a strong Europa League run would be the aim for the season.
Fantastic. Where do you think it sits in their line of sort of objectives for the season? And do you see perhaps Brendan playing some of the reserves in the games, perhaps?
It's hard to say where it sits, really. I think a lot of teams tend to, for the group stages, kind of feel out a lot of rotation and, giving some of the fringe players the opportunity in the midweek, especially during busy periods. And I can see Brendan doing the same kind of thing. Of course, if you get to the latter stages, that can obviously change and you go with stronger players just to see if you can go and win it. But I think in the group stages, he will rotate. At the moment, Leicester's got a lot of injury problems. Of course, indeed, he's been out for a period now. Ricardo Pereira's been out for a long period. Dennis Pratt got injured a couple of weeks ago. Who else? Daniel Amati came off in the last game injured. And then I think even in the internationals now, Soyuncu missed the Turkey second game. Johnny Evans came off at halftime for Ireland, so Northern Ireland. So I think that certainly at the back, they've got big, big problems with injuries at the moment. And I think it's quite threadbare. So there's important games against Villa and Arsenal either side of the Zurich game. And I think that the demand will be to rotate in the middle of the week. But I'm not sure how many defenders are available to rotate. So I think you will see perhaps different lineups, certainly from an offensive perspective. I don't see necessarily Vardy getting through 90 minutes in a week necessarily. So I expect some rotation and probably some of the fringe players may come out against Zurich.
Thanks. Andre, obviously your passion's Ukrainian football, but what's been your take on Leicester over the last 12 months or so?
Yeah, I've been following Leicester for a while, of course, since their championship and winning the championship in 2016. But if you take the last year, it's been like a new start for the team because of unfortunate events with club's owner, but Brendan Rodgers is doing a great job, and he's really established the team as, I would say, a top-class team for English standards. Even though they play in Europa League, but you can tell that they're providing young players like Madison, and which become stars right away. Jamie Vardy has still has his powers, and so does Kasper Schmeichel, and the foreign players of Leicester, which play in defense, and the French guys, really showing class. And this is the team which every Ukrainian team would love to play with, and it's always fascinating to follow such team, because as we even if we look at their last matches in this season, they scored 3 goals on average. So even if they lose, they concede 3 like with West Ham. So still a good result, and still pretty fun to watch.
Agree, completely agree. Ian, I know you've got a slightly different background to a lot of Leicester followers, shall we say. But in general, what do Leicester City supporters know about Zorya Lugansk?
Oh, I would say very little, to be honest. I mean, people, of course, know Ukrainian football, and there's been, of course, big players like Shevchenko over in the UK. And I think that people certainly respect Ukrainian football, and they know probably more Dynamo Kiev and Shakhtar Donetsk and the big clubs like that. But Zorya have had a presence in Europe. Of course, you know, my former club, Östersund, played against them in Europe a couple of years ago. Dnipro also have been prevalent in the Europa League. So I think people are aware of that there's a lot of quality, that there's regularly Ukrainian teams appearing in both Champions League and Europa League, which kind of signifies the quality of the league. I think Leicester fans will know that playing against Ukrainian teams is certainly not easy, that they often come with a lot of quality, very competitive games with a good level of technique. But I would say on an individual level, knowing individual players and individual personnel and tactics, I would say Leicester fans probably know very little about Zorya.
I mean, obviously, as you mentioned there, with your former team, Östersund, and we've spoken before, you've had some experience yourself coming up against Ukrainian teams. How do Ukrainian teams measure up in your own experiences?
Yeah, I mean, of course, the experience that Östersund had against Zorya, and then most recently we played Dynamo Kiev in a game over in Spain about a week before they played against Olympiacos. I think they had the majority of the main players in there. And the technical competencies of many of the players was extremely high. They were fantastic with the ball. They were also physical. They're always, always physical and tough to play against. But against Dynamo Kiev, I think we drew 0-0. We played well. So I think that but my experiences of coming up against Ukrainian teams is often that they're very, very good teams and very well organised. And I think the coaching level there is also very high. So, it's been good experience to play against them. So I think certainly for Leicester, and if they do rotate a few players, it's going to be extremely competitive game.
I agree completely. I like the fact you mentioned there about the coaching competencies of the Ukrainian league in particular. I'd like to bring Andrew in at this moment. Obviously, Viktor Skripnik, he had a difficult summer, but how's the team been settling in, Andrew, over the last month in particular?
Yeah, so Zorya finished third in last year's UPL, hence qualifying for the Europa League. But it's been quite a different, slower start to this season for them. They ended up losing the first few matches of their campaign and are currently sitting ninth. But over the past month, they've had a bit of a renaissance back to sort of better performances with draws against Dynamo Kiev and beating the likes of
FC Lviv.
Yeah, Lviv, and it in quite emphatic style. However, I think there's still a bit to go, because over the summer, Zorya lost a few of their key players that helped them get to that third place last year. A lot of them were on loan from Dynamo Kyiv. A lot of them and a few key defenders left for pastures new in Europe. So they've brought in a few different players to match sort of the club's relatively low budget. Some would say that they probably aren't to the highest standard compared to the players that they let go. But they seem to be, they've bedded in now over the past, you know, most recent few weeks after the sort of tough start for them. So just before the international break, they brought in a couple of players in towards the end of the transfer window. One guy is a Iranian young player of the year for 2019. He's on loan from Fenerbahce. He's called Alia Syed Manesh. And from what I've been reading up on him, he's quite a promising young talent. He's a forward and he hopefully should help Zorya with their sort of goal issues, because that's one place where they are quite lacking in the forward line. Their forwards just aren't probably up to the top scratch of, as you know, as good as the, maybe their midfield is. I guess the game with Leicester will probably have a higher focus on the midfield talent that Zorya have at their disposal. Kucherhin, Kabayev, those sort of players to sort of create stuff. And then we'll see how else it plays out in that sense.
Fantastic. Cheers for that. Andre, anything you'd like to add on Zorya's performances over the last few weeks?
Yeah, they still show the certain level against top teams in the Premier League, such as a draw with Dinamo. They have a strong opponent in the league, which is Desna, which we always seem to have those two teams as the contenders for third or fourth place. This season, I think it should be different, but that's another story. I would say that Zorya is getting back from last season. I mean, they didn't start that good, but you could tell that they're gaining up the rhythm of play and their style. They're picking up as they go. And I hope that in the group stage of Europa League, which they really count on, it's a real chance to qualify further for the first time, and they will put everything on stake in this one.
It's going to be a really big game tonight, as it will be. I must remember that. One of the things that I'm pretty certain people in England don't tend to realise is the financial value for Ukrainian teams away from the top two of qualifying to the group stage, even just reaching the group stage, will cover Zorya's budget for this year, and any advancement is just a bonus. It's an icing on top of the cake, shall we say, even the cherry, as one might call it themselves. How important is this game for Ukraine, Andrew, in terms of their coefficient? How much value do Zorya bring to the Ukrainian coefficient?
Yeah, definitely. They're the only Ukrainian side in the Europa League for Ukraine after two other teams failed to make it via qualifying. So they've got a bit of a substantial pull to pull it through. Ukraine from next season are going to lose their automatic spot in the Europa League. Spot goes just from qualifying in the playoffs. So with Dynamo and Shakhtar playing in the Champions League, and they've got relatively hard groups themselves, a lot are actually hoping that Zorya pull in a good performance in this particular group. And there are hopes for them to finish at least second to sort of try and pull that through. Whether that will happen, probably a bit too early to tell. But the game against Leicester will certainly be a litmus test.
Ian, obviously you've spent a lot of time up in Norway and Sweden, and now coming back home, do you feel there's a difference in perception of, towards the Europa League between different leagues? You know, we've just mentioned there Ukraine, but where England perhaps sees the Europa League in a lesser light?
Well, I think the value of the Premier League is so high that it's hard sometimes for the teams to then put all their resources into the Europa League, if you like. I mean, often you play Thursday, Sunday. Suddenly the Sunday game becomes difficult. You know, if Leicester have got to fly out to Ukraine, 2 days later they've got to play away at Arsenal or Man City or somewhere, you know, top team like that. It's very difficult to get the players at 100% level for both games. And often the Premier League takes precedent over that, mainly on financial. Of course, like I said before, if you get to the latter stages, suddenly the teams come alive in the Europa League and go to win it. But I think these early stages is more like testing out how the season's going to go. And they want to make sure that they're doing as well as they can in the Premier League. So they want to start well with managers, because also managers are judged on what they're doing in the Premier League. Abroad, like myself working in Sweden and working with a team that played out in the Europa League, you know, I know firsthand the value that's on that, especially in Sweden. It's often teams like Malmo, AIK that are going through and playing into the Europa League or Champions League. And what you find is it's not only the value that you get financially from being in the group stages of Europa, but it's actually the fact that you're putting your players on a more international market. So, you know, in Sweden, suddenly our player value within the squad increased massively because they were delivering and we were beating teams like Zorya. We were beating teams like Atletico Bilbao, Arsenal, Galatasaray, PAOK. And those players now on a European and international level were getting reference points against top European teams. Their value went through the roof. So suddenly we were now selling players. When I arrived, we sold Ken Seema to Watford, Saman Godos to Amiens for €4.5 million. These were big sales for a small Swedish club, but it was the Europa League really that gave the platform for that. So I think certainly out in Europe, in some of the, you would say, okay, smaller leagues than the Premier League, the Europa League plays quite a big part really in the country and the club football because of the value of it. So yeah, absolutely. I can imagine that from many, many perspectives, these games are really big for both Ukrainian football and Zorya.
You opened up an interesting concept there with next year. Obviously we've got the introduction of, is it the European Conference League coming in as well. Do you feel that's going to add extra benefit to some of the smaller leagues?
I mean, when you look at it from, like, when you read it in the UK and it feels like just a second tier for European football to be played at, and it's generally looked down upon because why would you want to be a part of that? I heard a lot of pundits talking like that, and I understand that from maybe a UK football perspective, that it does become very difficult to play competitive games that frequently and keep the quality of the squad up. But for smaller nations around in Europe, it will give a platform for players to go out into Europe, show themselves, and players are hugely motivated. Me as a coach, if I was a coach and getting the opportunity to go with a Swedish club and go and play Belgian clubs or Ukrainian clubs or clubs anywhere out in Europe to show myself as a coach and the qualities that I've got, it only adds to my CV, and the same with the players and the clubs themselves. So perhaps from an English football perspective, the next tier of Europa League may not be seen as such a wonderful thing. But I think across Europe in general, it can be a benefit to many clubs.
Definitely, I fully agree with you there. And even more so during the COVID times that we live in, any kind of opportunity is definitely worth grabbing. And on that point, Andrew, could you give us perhaps two or three Zorya names off the top of your head that perhaps we could look out for that could make a statement at a European stage during the group matches? Now, Andre, I'll come to you for any that Andrew perhaps doesn't mention.
Yeah, definitely. One player I think to look at is definitely the goalkeeper, Mikita Shevchenko. He recently got called up to the Ukraine national team. He's been around Ukrainian football for a while now, but he's finally sort of solidified his place, and he'll probably be key, especially coming up against top European forwards, and sort of the performances he pulls off there. Another key man is Vladislav Kucherhin. He's like the main creative spark in Zorya's squad. He was linked with Wolfsburg apparently this summer, but nothing actually came of that. But so we'll see how his sort of performances and goals essentially pull through. And one other bit more, well, you could say that Syed Manesh will probably be one to give a look out for. He's not actually played for Zorya yet, but there's been lots of hype around him, and I'm sure Fenerbahce fans will be keeping a close eye on their player too.
Okay. Andre, agree or disagree with those? Anybody you'd like to add in?
Yeah, I totally agree with Andrew. I would like to add Dmytro Ivanisenia, who recently got a call-up to the national team and survived coronavirus, apparently. He's a good defensive midfielder. He destroys most of the attacks, but he also keeps the ball running through the team space, as you would probably see from some technical analysis provided recently. Also, there is Kabayev, who is a agile player in attacking part. Not as bright as Kucherhin, but surely has his strongest points and can, I would say, create danger in front of opponent's goal, as well as Luniov. He's mostly used as a sub, but still a promising young man if he gets enough playing time. Vladlen Yurchenko, who used to play for Bayern 04 Leverkusen, he is the number 10 of Zorya, so basically all attacks come through him. For now, that should be it.
Oh, boys, just before we go, are we expecting sort of classic Skripnik away day tactics where he likes to keep the ball away from the opposition, showing no intent to score and trying to bore the pants off Leicester for the first 45 minutes and have them chase around like they did at Olimpijski with Dinamo a couple of weeks ago? Or do we expect some kind of tactical innovation there? Andre?
Yes, Skripnik is surely a mastermind, but in case of Leicester, I think he would go for a home win, whatever. He wouldn't stay back at home, that's for sure. I would say that he would be happy with 1-0, just nick a goal, whatever possible. Similar to Ukraine-Spain scenario, I would say. Give away the possession, give away the creative part, just complexity and compactness would do the trick. Away game, well, he might risk. It depends on the calendar when they play Leicester away, but it definitely, I would say if he would like to take a chance if he needs to.
And Andrew, do you agree with that? As it's the opening game, of course, in Leicester, you expect him to take the risk and maybe grab a win early on in the group?
Probably not. I think that Dinamo game was very much a dress rehearsal for this game. He will be just going for the sort of pragmatic approach, getting a bit defensive and then maybe try and go on the break towards the end of the half as Leicester get a bit more tired. But either way, I think a draw, they'd be very happy with that in that opener against probably the toughest team in the group.
And Ian, what are you hoping for there? Probably a bit different to the other guys.
Yeah, of course. I would hope for a Leicester win. Of course, that's my club where I grew up. So that even though I've been around and moved around, I always follow Leicester. So they've started the season very well, but I do think with the injury problems that they've got, it will be maybe a patched up back four. I can imagine Wes Morgan, maybe Fofana, the new signing, coming in and starting. But I think he'll rotate. I think he will probably prioritise the Villa and Arsenal game either side. And with the frailties at the back, I would say it wouldn't surprise me if Zorya scored a goal. But I think Leicester have been very good offensively this season so far. So I would say, I would like to think a Leicester win, but I would imagine it's already a goal. I would say 3-1 Leicester. That would be my tip.
Well, it would be nice to see a goal there. Certainly would. So it's been great having a little chat before the game. It's going to be a pleasure this evening to sit down and watch the match. As always, thank you for your time, gents. It's been a pleasure. Andrew, if anybody wants to get in touch with you to berate your predictions for Zorya, what's the best way to do it?
Yeah, at Zorya Londonsk. So London SK on Twitter and Instagram.
Fantastic. Andre, how about you?
Just type in Oblon Casual on Instagram anytime.
Fantastic. Ian, if people want to have a chat with you about Leicester or your time in Norway and Sweden.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm on Twitter. I'm not brilliant on social media, but I'm on it. And I'm just at Ian Birchnell. So I'm on there if anyone wants to follow. It's very limited tweets that go out from me. But yeah, I'm there if anyone wants to tell me I've got the predictions wrong.
Fantastic. And of course, I'm Adam at Ukrafoot24. A big thank you to Stell at Shoot the Defence for giving us the platform to put this podcast out this evening. It's been a pleasure as always. Have a great day, everyone, and goodbye.